Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I am back from a brief hiatus. I went to Austin, and Austin did me wrong. It's actually perfect that I sound like, you know, I've just been inhaling smoke and booze and every kind of bad thing that you should not do on vacation. Because that's how the Lakers played against the Mavericks when they lost by 49. I'm joined by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, how have you been with what's been going on with the Lakers? Because it's been rough.
Yeah, between the Lakers and having to cover for you at Silver Screen and Roll in the podcast while you were on vacation and having, sounds like a pretty great time. I feel like I lost by significantly more than 49.
Well, all you need to lose by is one more to break the hashtag didn't lose by 50. So,
yeah. So I feel like I did lose by 50. I don't think that I could break that hashtag. I love the podcast. I love my job, but I had to do a lot of both last week, and it was a lot. But yeah, I should complain about my really cool job. So
yeah, I'm sure everybody feels
super
terrible.
Relatable.
Yeah. All right. So basically, the way this is going to work is tanking has turned its ugly head and is gazing upon this Lakers season, or the burnt ashes of what once at one point looked like a promising season, and it has fallen off a cliff. It is currently free falling. So Harrison and I are going to talk about tanking, but before we do that, let's make sure you're using the promo codes that you should. LO Lakers for Mac Weldon and SeatGeek. Lakers 10 for BetDSI.com. And you're following the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. All right, Harrison. Here's how I think we should set parameters, set guidelines for how to handle the tank this time around. Because this isn't how, you know, the last couple of years you knew right from the get-go what a top priority, if not the top priority, was for the Lakers. This one,
I think some of us have different definitions of tanking. So I think we should lay out what we think it means.
And I want, you know, maybe we can get through this one with a little bit more optimism than with the prior 2 years. So,
and also, I mean, really, we were originally the Team Tank podcast, so I feel like this is kind of our beat. I think we're back on our specialty.
I have to agree.
Written a column the last 2 years, now 3 years, because I started it up again. You can check that out on Silver Screen and Roll, and it's going to be running the rest of the season. Tank Watch is my column, so I will be doing that most likely weekly, and we will be keeping track of the Lakers tank, which is, I've ended it the last 2 years with, this is probably the last time I'm going to write this column, so it's been fun and also not fun. And I think I'm jinxing it. So again, we're back on the tank watch 3 years in a row, going strong.
So we should mention, all right, we've already talked about the odds for this year and you know what the most optimistic tank would look like if they could somehow get all the way down to the bottom. It would be slightly better. It'd be a weighted coin flip, basically.
Well, so if they get the worst overall record, which they won't, because again, Brooklyn is one of the worst teams I've ever watched in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And if the Lakers did by some miracle get the worst overall record, it would be a 64.2% chance of keeping their pick. Right now, they have the second worst record in the league because the Miami Heat won tonight and the Phoenix Suns won last night, as of when we're recording this on Monday night. And the Lakers have the second worst record in the league right now, so a 51.6% chance to keep their pick. And the Miami Heat right now, because Dallas and it looks like there's some weird chicanery going on with the odds right now, because yesterday the second best odds were like 55 and the third best were like 46, so right now there's like some weird ties and stuff going on. So
okay.
But anyway, it's like 64, 55, 45, something around there for the top three.
So the other thing I was going to note here was next year there will be 0 point in tanking. If the pick portrays this year, it for sure goes the following year, right? As two second rounders to Orlando.
I did not understand what you just said.
So, like this year there's still hope that the Lakers keep their pick. But if they keep their pick this year, all that such hope goes out the window for the following year in 2018.
So the Lakers, if they keep their pick this year, they will – I'm scrolling down just to make sure that I get this 100% right. Mm-hmm. So the Lakers owe a 2019 first-round pick to Orlando unless the Lakers keep their pick this year, in which case Philadelphia gets their 2018 pick unprotected, and the Magic would instead get 2018 and 2019 second-rounders.
Yeah, so
– oh, no, 2017 and 2018 second-rounders.
That all sounds
instead
right.
Of a 2019 first round pick, which is what they will get if the Lakers convey their pick to the Philadelphia 76ers this year, in which case the Lakers would keep it next year.
So basically, for those who could keep up with that, well done. For those who couldn't, the Lakers want to keep this pick because you don't know what it might look like next year. One would hope that there'll be a better team next year too, so the actual value of the pick would be different next year than what it currently is now. But hey, I thought they'd be better this year than they were last year, and you know, it turns out I was pretty wrong.
Well, no, I mean, we have to put this in perspective, right? They have one less win right now than they had all of last season.
Yeah, fair
point. So they're still better than they were last year. They've just been really bad lately.
Can I ask you a question? This feels like a much bigger kick to the nuts, like the way the season has turned out, you know, than I think I anticipated, even with, you know, having pretty much basement level expectations for this team. It was pretty much just develop, get better, and you know, try to go into next year with some momentum in the right direction. The way this has played out, it seems to hurt more than I think it should. Do you feel anywhere near the same way, and have you thought about it and tried to explain it?
No and no.
Okay, so that was a great topic. All right, so here's what I think.
I mean, you could talk about why you feel that way. I mean, I think it might have been because they were better than you expected to start the year, and maybe you started to buy in. I just never thought that they were going to play that way for the whole year. I always kind of thought that there was going to be a correction coming, and the correction has been swift and brutal.
I don't think that's true, because remember, even when they were 10-10, I was one of the more reluctant fans about what that could mean for the rest of the year.
Yeah, right?
And so I don't know if that's true, but it just feels like, so even when they were losing before. Like, even when they would lose games early in the year, it would tend to be to, you know, pretty good teams, and they'd fight all the way to the end, and you never felt like they were despondent or dejected in the middle of the game. And I went back and I watched some of that Dallas game, and holy crap. I hate using the term quit for professional athletes who do things with their bodies that I could never dream of, but That was as close.
No, they quit yesterday. You don't lose by 49 without quitting. I mean, they saw the writing on the wall, and they decided to kind of ride out the rest of the game.
Which to me hurts more hearing about them quitting than I think I anticipated finding out that they had quit. You know, how I would take that. Because there are going to be some games like that where you just don't have it. And you just don't get, you know, you don't find it within yourself to fight and get back into a game. But a 49 spot to not a very good Dallas Mavericks team.
A really bad Mavericks team. Yeah. I mean, Lakers fans that have only watched the Lakers this year or just haven't watched that much of Dallas. Maybe they've watched other national game teams. Dallas is really, really bad, but you wouldn't know that by watching them play the Lakers. And not even just yesterday. They've pretty thoroughly dominated the Lakers most games that they've played against them.
There's no way you would know this off the top of your head, but I think they've outscored the Lakers by like 70 points in their games.
I can look that up.
I would say that they would be right around there, right? Because it was the 49 spot. They lost earlier in the year by, I think, like 13 or 15 points. And then
you're saying 70 points total?
Yeah, yeah.
This is really engaging. You should talk about something while I look
this
up. All
right, so I'm gonna go through some of the parameters of how I'd like to see tanking handled this year, right?
Okay.
And so I want to start with Jim Buss. Does he stick around if they spend another year tanking? Because, I mean, we were talking about maybe the playoffs help him out. You know, maybe they get some momentum that way. But and I'm as adamant a Jim Buss supporter as there can be, but this is now three straight years of just terrible Lakers basketball. Where do you think he goes from this point on?
So the Lakers have lost to the Mavericks by a total of, that cannot be right. It's definitely not 183 points. I made a mistake there somewhere. Give me a second. I think that Jim Buss is probably I mean at this point you almost have to think that he's gone, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's too bad because like even if Jim Buss goes and they keep their pick, they're going to stay on the same path anyway, right? It's not like they're going to fire or Jim Buss is going to step away and now all of a sudden they're going to go and trade all these young kids for a superstar. They're going to try to trade them away for a superstar. And
do we know that?
Well, if they did, it'd be a mistake.
Not to wildly speculate, but Jeannie was reported to be soliciting opinions on the Lakers the same night that she had dinner with Magic Johnson at a game, very publicly. I feel like Magic Johnson is just going to trade the young Lakers for, if he were to be involved in that decision, would just trade them for any person that he's heard of or has watched play well one time, based on his Twitter feed, exclusively.
all right.
Vladdy, I think DeMarcus Cousins is a great player. He could be a perennial all-star if he was just in the right environment. Here's D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, and Brandon Ingram.
I want to like get angry at you for being wrong, but you're not wrong at all.
I mean, I'm just saying, based on Magic Johnson's Twitter account, that's how I assume he would negotiate in a trade.
With a whole bunch of exclamation points.
Although he's a shrewd businessman, so maybe he's in the boardroom, he's like a savvy negotiator, and just on Twitter, he just like tweets all caps.
I would also add, though, to that point, that I could also see Magic pushing for the Lakers to sign Rudy Gay in the offseason, because Kobe had the torn Achilles. And maybe Magic thinks that, you know, Rudy wanted to be like Kobe. And if you want to be like Kobe, that makes you an automatic Laker, right? I think that's how that works. Do I have that math right?
Yeah, I think like it's if you like Kobe, then you could be a Laker. But if you don't, then they don't want you anyway.
Yeah, right.
I think that's been like the stated organizational opinion. Also, they've lost to the Mavericks by a total of 75 points this year.
Wow, that was not bad on my part.
You were pretty. That was shockingly close. I didn't expect you to be close.
All right, so.
But anyway, we should, other than just roasting Magic Johnson for his ridiculous Twitter account, we should probably talk about what we think that tanking means. Because, actually, no. I should ask you, Are you in favor of tanking at this point? Because I wrote an article today that just said that it's time for the Lakers to embrace the tank. And I'm wondering if you feel the same way, because we have not talked really while you've been on vacation. That's we're not this isn't a bit. We just really haven't talked, and it's hurtful to me.
Dude, you would not have wanted to talk to me while I was in Austin anyway. I've basically been under the influence for the last 5 days straight.
All right, I'll cut that one out.
But so here's how my stance on tanking. And it's been the same basically throughout the last 3 years, where the Lakers aren't fielding a good basketball team. So whether or not we don't like the fact that they're tanking doesn't really change anything, right? It also doesn't change anything if the players don't like hearing about them tanking, because if it really annoyed them, and if they really had that kind of self-pride that they didn't, you know, that they didn't want to watch their fans watch their games and hope that they're losing, if that was that big a thing to them, they don't lose by 49 to the Mavericks, a bad Mavericks team. They don't lose by 75 combined points to a Mavericks team. That's a lack of self-pride.
I don't know that it's a total – I mean, yesterday, yes, they did kind of roll over when the game got completely out of hand. But, they came out and they were trying. They were just playing badly.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's a matter of that, you know, they don't care about how they're perceived among their fans. In fact, I think it does burn them. I mean, you just like you talk to any of these guys after a loss and like they're not happy about it by any means. They're upset. They want to win. They just aren't there yet where they can win consistently.
So I saw this question,
and I think that kind of factors into the tanking thing.
So I saw this question come up on the timeline between you and Ross, and basically the way I kind of look at it, I think it's fair for people, especially fans who are sick of hearing about tanking. And I honestly don't begrudge anybody who's sick of hearing about tanking.
There are more than a few of them. Check my mentions, and I can't blame them either.
No, look. Matt Moore, if he hears me say this, will laugh at, you know, laugh me off of Twitter. But for Laker fans who feel like they deserve better, that's a good thing, right? Like when you have a self-worth that you're saying, no, this isn't okay. Not just not making the playoffs, but not being close to playoff contention for going on 3 years now is not okay for Laker fans. And the Lakers wouldn't be the brand, they wouldn't be the superpower they've been over their history if people were apathetic about their team, right? So when I hear fans get angry about, you know, another year of tanking in my mentions, I honestly, all I can do is kind of...
They should expect better. They've gotten better.
Yeah, well, yeah. And when I see those mentions, I honestly just have to hit the favorite button to respond, because there's no way to disagree with them on it. There's no way to say, oh no, be patient. I promise, eventually things are going to turn around. I mean, we've been saying that now for 3 years, and I do think, you know, eventually they aren't going to just dwell in the lottery for you know, the rest of in perpetuity. But I do think at this point,
most likely,
I would probably, yeah. If that happens, then yes, Jim definitely should get fired. But for the purpose of being a sports fan, the idea of rooting against, you know, one's team while that team is playing, it kind of goes contrary to what it's like to be a fan, right?
I can understand
how, you know, we did that for a little while because it made the most sense, and you know, there wasn't really any other outcome for the games anyway. But you know, at some point you want to get back to just being a fan again, and it was nice when this year started that we could just kind of be a fan again, and now we get the gut punch of, oh yep, that's right, we got to be armchair GM again and keep tabs on lottery odds.
Well, I don't think that you have to root against the team. I think that kind of goes into how I define tanking. To me, tanking is selling off the guys that aren't going to be a part of the future for assets, either not playing them or trading them for future assets that may help the team down the line when it's good again. and playing the young guys as much as possible. And the Lakers are kind of already doing the second one for the most part. Russell obviously has not played as much in fourth quarters as most people would like or would be ideal from a tanking perspective, because you want, like, when, again, when I mean tanking, I don't mean deliberately trying to lose games. I mean throwing your young guys out there and seeing how well they play. And so I think that that's what the Lakers should be doing. That's what they've kind of started to trend towards. That's why part of the reason why we've seen Zubats start to get more extended run, I think. And so I don't think that you necessarily have to root against these guys. I think that you just have to root for the team to be playing the right guys. And if they are, then yeah, you should be rooting for those guys to do well. It's just like even Luke Walton talked about the wins that they get because, you know, say Lou Williams dropped 51 and they ran him out of high pick and roll all night. Like, those aren't that satisfying. Like, he wants to win because they're playing well as a team.
Right. And I think because of the point you just made, how a Lou Williams aided victory hurts, it kind of hurts more than it feels good, in my opinion. You kind of have to move him.
Yeah. And the only problem there is like, find the suitor. Right, because this is the thing that I've gone back and forth with people a lot, is who's the suitor for Lou Williams? Because I don't think that there are teams that think that they're a Lou Williams away from being able to compete with Golden State and Cleveland, and I don't think that Cleveland or Golden State necessarily needs Lou Williams.
So I think there's an in-between, though, between when you're talking about the purpose that some of these teams are looking at, their goals for the season, than just...
Name the team, Anthony. Name names. Don't be vague. Name names.
Orlando. Orlando is somebody who I could see moving or kind of trading for Lou Williams. They have this kid, Mario Hezonja, who can't get off the bench anyway, right? And they're in... If you look at their roster, they're built for win now. So unless they move Serge Ibaka at the deadline, they're going to still continue to try winning now. And Lou Williams, as we've seen this year, helps win. And he won't help win games, you know, against Cleveland or Golden State. He won't help get them into the play. He won't even get headlines. Like, we watch traffic and stuff, and I don't think it would necessarily move the needle over there. But what it would do is it would tell their fans that, yes, this year hasn't gone as we've liked it to go. But we're in win now mode, and, you know, we can get this guy for basically next to nothing when you're looking at what Hezonja is bringing them anyway. I mean, that kind of trade makes sense to me.
Maybe I really can't see Orlando giving up Hezonja for a year and a half of Lou Williams, but I mean, maybe they're in kind of more trouble. I mean, he was the fifth pick 2 years ago.
Well, I've talked to the guy who runs Orlando Magic Daily, and he says that they can't figure out whether they want to go into, you know, which direction to go. And for
well, I know their GM's job is on the line, which always makes you think maybe there's a dicey trade to be made from a future perspective, because this guy's like, hey, if I don't do something now to show improvement, I'm not going to be here for the future. But I still don't see them trading a guy they took fifth overall 2 years ago for Lou Williams.
No, and again, the point you made about, you know, needing to find suitors is a good one. And another team that I kind of have my eye on again, and it's the same kind of situation where it seems like too good of a prospect to give up for Lou Williams, is when I look at Utah. They have Shelvin Mack is getting minutes instead of Dante Exum, and if you're Utah, you're saying, look, we already have a really exciting young core as it is. Dante Exum doesn't necessarily add to the core, and he hasn't been as good as we've hoped if he can't get minutes ahead of Shelvin Mack. I think Lou Williams is objectively better at basketball than Shelvin Mack is. So, similar kind of trade there where you just kind of say...
If the Jazz trade Dante Exum for Lou Williams, I will give you a week off of shows and record them by myself.
All right. You guys are witnesses to this.
Because there's zero chance of that happening.
And I would probably agree with you. I would probably agree with you, but I'm just saying that there are selling points to make. Like if you're Utah, you're kind of saying
necessarily trade those guys. They could trade like some type of pick.
Oh yeah,
or they could trade something like that. And so maybe those teams are willing to give something up for Lou. I don't know if I totally see the fits there, but I mean maybe there are teams. I just don't think that it's particularly likely that the Lakers find something to Lou for that they value enough to give up Lou, especially when we've seen in the past how they tend to overvalue their own assets.
Yeah, and I mean, I would hope that at some point they start learning from that mistake, but and again, if they can't learn from that mistake and they continue to tank the way they do, then the case is kind of there for Jim Buss to start considering other employment. And I wanted to make this point because you talked about Orlando's GM feeling like he has to fight for his job right now. I don't see Jim Buss making a trade to fight for his job because he's still part owner of the Lakers.
I wrote about that. Yeah, I wrote the same thing yesterday. I can't see him completely mortgaging the future to try and make an 8 seed run.
Yeah, and Mitch Kupchak, as much as it would suck, I really like having Mitch Kupchak. I love doing his voice, for example. But he's been in this game long enough where I could see him saying, you know what, I don't need to be around here for another rebuild. Now, if he does, go to Jim and say, hey, this hypothetical trade, I'm not going to name a trade or whatever, might squeak us into the playoffs or might get us a good, couple headlines in the city for a little while. But I also think he cares more about the Lakers brand than his job that he's held for feels like 30 years at this point.
That feels like a little long, but yeah.
These last 3 years feel like 30 years, in fairness.
That's a fair point. I think I feel older because of these last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. So the next thing, same rules apply then with Nick Young, I'm guessing, in your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, who's giving up something of value for half a season of Nick Young? And I see Nick Young as even less likely to be moved, not even just for that, but how does a team know what Nick Young they're getting? Because he hasn't even been playing as well for the Lakers lately as he was to start the year. And he's proven to be a guy that's so, his play is so based on how happy he is in his current situation that you'd have to feel really confident that your locker room was going to be a place where he was happy, I think.
Yep, I completely agree on
that. And especially I think the gut punch of getting traded by his hometown franchise, I think would be rough for him, and I think it would be rough for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as annoying as that is to hear for fans who are, pro tank and driven towards doing, running this tank as best as the Lakers can. Those are just the facts that the Lakers are dealing with. And unlike our press secretary, we can't just make up, facts.
It's hard to find a suitor. Maybe they find something, but maybe not. But they don't have to trade guys to embrace the tank. They just need to play their young guys a lot. And mm-hmm. They're kind of close to that, and they just need to kick it up another notch.
Yep. So,
and there are, because they're already bad enough to be tanking. So it's what do they do to acceptably tank and to get the most value out of this tank? And I think that would be to see what their young guys do. And hey, if those young guys, if they start playing them and they start winning, then that's great. That means the Lakers have something right now, and maybe they're a little bit ahead of schedule. But if they don't, then it means that the Lakers get to keep that asset and they get to keep a 2019 first round pick.
Yep. All right. So my last question on this, unless you have any other ones, is, should Laker fans be concerned that the pieces, the assets that they've tanked for to this point might not be good enough to raise the franchise up to levels that you'd like to see them get them to?
The people that listen to our show and still get mad at us for talking about youth, shout out to you guys, because you're not going to like this answer. But no, I would not be concerned. They're just, again, they're so young. The last 2 years were basically wasted. I think it's just going to take some time. Teams this young just don't win games. It's just, that's not what it is in the NBA. That's not what it's ever been.
Yeah, and my only point on
and
this...
And some people kind of throw the average age back. There are a bunch of teams younger than the Lakers, technically by average age, and like maybe
that's
true.
That's because the Lakers employee Luol Deng, and he's like 85.
Yeah, he's like 85, I think. I think Timofey Mozgov's like at least 37. Mm-hmm. You have Jose Calderon, Marcelo Huerta. So like even the Lakers' sophomore guys are old. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, so like their actual meaningful age of guys that are part of their core is young, and so you just can't expect them to win a ton of games right now. And I think they'll be better this year than they were last season. I don't think that's a far limb to go out on, considering they have 16 wins already and they only won 17 games last year. And I think that they'll win more games next year than they won this year. And I don't think that it's time to be concerned yet. I think we've seen a lot of good stuff from these younger guys, and I think that we've also seen a lot of the problems that young teams deal with.
I agree with everything you said, but I would also add to it, it's hard not to be at least a little concerned, and maybe concerned, maybe nervous or anxious is a better word for this. Concerned implies a lot more negative a connotation, right? But what makes me a little anxious, and it's a natural sentiment, is how good some of the surrounding rookies and sophomores have been, right? Rookie, sophomores, and third-year guys. So you look around the league, you have the Giannises, you have the Porzingises. Is it Porzingi?
Well, Giannis is more than 3 years into his career.
He's, what, five?
Yeah, something like that.
You have Nikola Jokic, who looked really good against the Lakers. You have Towns in Minnesota. So you have... There are players out there who you look at and you say, man, it'd be nice
well,
to have
so,
those guys.
I mean, you're talking about the once-in-a-generation guys.
Oh, yeah, right. But the thing is...
And so, yeah, maybe I'm not saying that the Lakers necessarily have any once-in-a-generation guys, but they have a bunch of good guys.
Right, I think it's worth pointing out that
Porzingis is necessarily an indictment of Russell. It's just that Porzingis is really freaking good.
Right. What I was going to say, though, is that in situations prior when the Lakers were
Giannis
drafting,
is in his fourth year, by the way.
What's that? Fourth year?
Yeah, fourth year.
Mm-hmm. So in situations prior when the Lakers were drafting up at the top of the draft, they got those once-in-a-generation guys. Now, part of it, you know, that's part of why they were so rarely up at the top of their draft was because...
Yeah, I was going to say, how many top draft picks have they even had? I mean, there's Magic, who...
Worthy.
Yeah, Magic and Worthy. And, yeah, I mean, Worthy, it turned out to be a good pick, but it's not like they would have went wrong if they had picked... I believe it was Wilkins was the other guy in his mm-hmm. draft, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so... I guess the way I'll put it is, in situations prior when there were other generational talents there, and the Lakers were drafting at the top of the draft, they tended to find those guys. And I don't think it's fair, but I think it's worth mentioning that that's kind of where some of this frustration comes in from. Is, man, we go through three years of this, and I don't know if I see any kid out here who is as good as some of the generational talents that you see at, you know, from his peers. And
sure, but you have to put it in context. And so, I mean, they couldn't have got – Randall was the seventh pick. I don't know if there are guys taken behind him that the Lakers would rather have.
According to, what's it, Tim McMahon, they could have drafted LeBron that year, right?
Yeah, or something like that. And then there's Russell. And so, yeah, they're probably Porzingis. I think right now if the Lakers could do that one over, they'd probably do that. But again, we're 2 years in. We don't know for sure that Porzingis is going to be better. But it seems likely. Mm-hmm. And maybe Booker. I know there's some people that would rather have Booker. But other than those two, I don't know that there's guys in Russell's draft that you'd rather have the Lakers have taken over him.
Mm-hmm. No, they. I would much rather they have drafted Towns when they couldn't have drafted Towns, too.
Come on. Yeah, exactly. And like Ingram, it's way too soon to know that.
Yeah.
So now, that's what I'm saying. Is
now,
like,
what would hurt is, like, in Ingram's case, now some of this is just luck, right? Like, yeah. That's the thing in Philadelphia is you're kind of looking at this as just luck. And for Sam Hinkie, like, he has to be sitting there, you know, he has to love that Embiid is turned out as good as he's turned out. But
it's
he has
gonna
to
get him another job.
Well, he's got to be sitting there saying, like, man, you guys couldn't have waited for just to see this kid play before you fired me, right? And
no, man, just, Sam Hinkie's playing the long game. He could have maybe Embiid ends up being really good and, like, he still doesn't last because the other guys didn't pan out. But now that Embiid panned out and Hinkie doesn't have a job, he's getting another, like, 8-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
This is like it's like the being fired version of trading for two conditional second round picks.
Yeah, that's gone about as well as Hinkie could have hoped for.
Yeah,
because for a little while it looked like he wasn't even employable anymore.
Yeah, now Embiid broke out. Embiid is using the Hinkie mantra of trust the process, even though I guess Hinkie didn't come up with trust the process, but it describes the Hinkie regime as his nickname. So, like, Brian Colangelo has to hear the PA announcer announce Embiid as the process every single night. You know, the guy, a.k.a. the name of the era of the GM that he replaced.
Yeah.
That's got to be awkward.
Yeah, a little bit. But what I was going to say, again, I get where people are coming from when they're frustrated. We just have to show some new nuance. You know, we have to show some nuance here with that frustration. I said earlier that there was going to be the last point here. But as far as how to handle, like, social media for this stuff, so I can promise.
Oh, you're going to give people advice on how to tweet. This should be really good.
Well, no, I'm just going to say how I'm going to handle it, and people can they can either agree or disagree with how.
All right, hold on. Let me try and predict this. I'm going to tweet lots of bad puns.
Yep.
I'm going to get really angry occasionally about some journalistic thing at, like, 1 a.m. in the morning. And
dude, that's so inside baseball.
That about covers it, right?
What I was going to say was I'm not going to outwardly cheer for losses, right? Like, a couple of years ago when the Lakers were, you know, I think they won an overtime game against the Celtics, and I was actually kind of bummed that they lost the game or that they won the game. And the reason I was bummed that they won the game was because they played, like, Ronnie Price down the stretch, and he did things in overtime, and I remember being really angry. Because if you're gonna win, you have to win with the kids. But if you're gonna lose, you know, if you're gonna win, and it's because Ronnie Price, you know, hits a game winner or something dumb like that, you just look all the dumber. And so with this one, you know, during these games and stuff, I'm not going to cheer against the Lakers as I have in years past, where I was pretty jaded because of the direction of the organization. I still trust the long play in this enough to not cheer against some of these young kids.
Yeah, I think again, it goes back to you want to see the young guys play a lot, and if they win games, then great for them. That's good for the organization. If they don't, then they're taking their lumps, and you see what happens later, and then maybe you get to keep that pick. But either way, you have to figure out what you have in these guys.
Yeah, And it's good to know that it seems like Luke Walton and the front office is on the same page here. So I don't think the Lakers will have to make a move to protect the head coach against his own competitive nature.
No, probably not. I think him starting to put Zubats into the rotation kind of shows that.
Yeah, and Zubats also earned it. Like, I don't think it's a blatant talent or tanking move.
I mean, they were more worried about him making mistakes. Like, they knew Thomas Robinson had a higher floor, I think, than Zubats does.
Mm-hmm.
But Zubats also has a much higher ceiling, and I think that it's a combination of those two. Like, a lot of times coaches are going to go with the guy with the lower floor rather than the higher ceiling, just because they'd rather, like, kind of know what they're going to get.
Yep, absolutely. So that does it for this.
It doesn't quite do it. We got to end on a little bit of a lighter note, and we're gonna do a new segment, Smush Parker Update. And in case you were wondering, Smush Parker is still alive, and he was able to, I guess, track down a microphone and talk to TMZ, and we're going to... Anthony, do you want to guess what he said?
Well, I already know what he said, so...
Oh, you saw it. Okay, well... So Smush Parker told TMZ Sports, "I wholeheartedly, no doubt in my mind, believe we, being him and Kobe, could have been the best backcourt in Lakers history."
I can't disagree.
I guess anything's possible, right?
Didn't they once combine for like 90 points between the two of them?
That's a good point. I think that's got to be pretty high up there in terms of a combined total between teammates.
I mean, would it shock you if Steph and Clay haven't done that before?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, therefore, I'm just talking math.
Right, yeah, now. The original Splash Brothers was Kobe and Smush.
It was Splash and Smush.
Oh, the Smush Brothers.
Yeah. Dude, that sounds like porn. All right, we got to go. We got to go. It's really late, and I need to sleep off
Anthony
this.
Yeah, Anthony has come perilously close to making references we're going to get fired for a couple times tonight. So yeah. we're gonna shut this one down. This podcast, we tanked this podcast. I apologize to everyone. We'll get better. We're rebuilding. We're gonna get a high pick. Come back stronger tomorrow.
Yep. All right. We will talk to everybody tomorrow. I am back here from vacation, so you guys get to look forward to this stuff more.
I miss you already, Bryant.
thank you too, Bryant, for filling in. Those were good shows. We will talk to everybody soon. We'll try to get a few guests in here to make this tanking experience as enjoyable as we possibly can, because we're all in this together now.
Yeah, I think our plan is to try and interview a tank at some point this week, but we're going to see how that goes.
Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, there we go. First, future Locked On Lakers guest.
We'll talk to everybody soon. Make sure you're finding the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Use those promo codes LO Lakers for SeatGeek and Mack Weldon, and Lakers10 on BetTSI.com. Have a good rest of your day. We are now riding a tank, and we'll ride this tank into the sunset and hopefully keep it top.
We're all together on this tank. We're just singing Kumbaya on this purple and gold tank.
Hashtag futility for Fultz. Shouts to Smush Parker.